Hi, this is Joe Castellano. Welcome inside China Basin, your San Francisco Giants three times a week podcast brought to you by Kane's Tire in San Rafael. Kane's Tire has always had the lowest prices in Marin for 54 years. Today's guest is San Francisco Chronicle columnist Scott Osler. And joining us is Scott Osler to talk about the San Francisco Giants. He's been a busy man covering the NBA playoffs and the Golden State Warriors. What a great run for that team so far, Scott. And, you know, Giants fans, Warriors fans, a lot to cheer about these days. Are we getting spoiled here in the Bay Area with some of the great teams that we have going on?
Yeah, I think that's a good word for it, Joe. It's kind of crazy, huh? You go so many years, especially like with the Warriors, so many years without any kind of glory at all, then a little nibble of the playoffs, and all of a sudden they're the favorites to win the thing. Giants, obviously, A's. Yeah, it's crazy. It's me.
Well, you know, the Warriors.
Thank God we have the Raiders and the 49ers to kind of bring us back to a reality.
Right, and the Sharks not making the playoffs. But with the Giants, I mean, this every other year thing, you always wonder in the offseason, did they do enough? And this was a, you know, kind of a tough offseason for them because usually Brian Sabian likes to bring back the players that helped him win the championship. And the one guy that he wasn't able to bring back, Pablo Sandoval, so far is looking good for the Red Sox. I mean, he's swinging the bat well. He's over 300. And Casey McGee is off to a slow start with the Giants. Just overall, when you looked at the offseason coming in and kind of glancing at what's happened the first month of the year, did the Giants do enough? I mean, do they have enough here to compete throughout the season?
This is great. I get to look back and tell them that I was right 3 months ago or 6 months ago. But, yeah, I think they did not do enough. And obviously the Pablo thing was not – I don't blame the Giants for that. I think they made a legitimate offer, and Pablo just had some kind of – we still don't know what the problem was, but he had some kind of deal. He wanted to leave no matter what. So I don't think – had they lowballed him, then we could criticize the Giants and, you know, they ran him out of town, but they didn't. So – but – saying that having been said by me, I don't think Casey McGee was really a suitable replacement based on what he's done in the first month of the season, but based on the fact that he just his track record isn't really that strong. So what he's doing now isn't a huge surprise. He doesn't seem to be a power hitter, he's not a championship caliber third baseman. So they probably didn't do enough there, and they probably should have done enough knowing. I think they knew that Matt Cain was not fully healthy. They probably knew more than we did. So knowing that and knowing they had all these other question marks with Lincecum and even Huddy and all that stuff and Vogelsong, they should have done more there.
Well, they did try. I mean, they tried to bring in John Lester, but he was going to cost a fortune. Right, and James Shields, it didn't work out. So, you know, what other direction could they turn? So far, they've been pretty lucky with Chris Heston coming up from the minor leagues. He looks really good. But what else do you do in this situation?
Yeah, you don't. And I can't blame him. Like the John Lester thing, the amount of money that you have to pay for a pretty good pitcher is so crazy, and it's such a huge gamble. And it's gambling on pitchers I've always been leery of. So, you know, I guess I can't really blame him too much. I don't know specifically what they could have done, but I just don't think they did enough at third base. And maybe, you know, their salary is pretty high. The payroll is pretty decent. And so you can't really say they're cheaping out. But, yeah, they probably need to do a little bit more. But there's still time.
There is still time. And, you know, some teams overreact. The Giants don't seem to be that type of team. When Hunter Pence got hit by a pitch right away at the beginning of spring training, they didn't go out and get another outfielder. They said, you know, we're pretty good right now. And they seem to be following that kind of MO. You know, when you looked at Joe Panik last year, that worked out great when they could have gone and tried to trade for a second baseman. I mean, they tried a little bit there with Dan Uggla. Do you like this philosophy? Are they getting lucky? Or is this a philosophy that they should be following, being patient?
Well, they kind of got lucky last year, I think. For instance, when Uggla came in, had he been even moderately able to stumble around without falling down, maybe they would have stayed with him longer. The fact that he took such a horrible pratfall that forced him into going panic, and they basically wound up being forced in. It wasn't like by grand design. Let's bring panic in. We think he's ready. They did not. They were forced into that. So they got a little bit lucky, but you know they signed him and groomed him. So you can't say it was total luck if he's their guy.
We'll have more with Scott Osler from the San Francisco Chronicle right after this. Inside China Basin is sponsored by Angel Borelli, a nationally known expert on pitching mechanics from right here in the Bay Area. She works with some of the best pitchers in the Bay Area, troubleshooting and solving their performance issues. Listen to Angel Borelli's weekly podcast, The Fix, which discusses issues and solutions for pitchers from a sports science perspective. And get a weekly tip on pitching at Angel Borelli Pitching on Facebook. Check out our website, jimscience.com, where you can order her books and other publications. Contact Angel Borelli today. You touched on payroll, and with the Giants playing these LA teams, playing the Dodgers this week, and then the Angels come into AT&T Park, it's all about Northern California versus Southern California here this entire week as far as baseball is concerned. When you look at the difference in payrolls, Dodgers and Angels, I mean, they're able to pay out so much money. They can make mistakes and still get away with it. So how does that affect everything that goes on as far as what you see from these two teams and the way they operate?
Well, obviously you can get away with it in the short term. Last year, I think the Giants won the World Championship, and they did not top what the Dodgers were spending. But I think in the long run, Joe, if you have intelligent leadership, intelligent general manager and scouting and all that stuff, and you're outspending your rival team by, $40 million a year or whatever it is, over a period of time, you're just going to win more games, I think. You're just going to be more successful because that's just the way it works. And I know there are exceptions, and we can point out anecdotal evidence that it's not always the way, but, who's won more world champions? Who's been in more World Series, has won more championships than any team in baseball over the last 80 years or whatever? And the Yankees.
Yankees,
right?
Exactly.
And if you look back, even before, as far back as you want to go, they basically outspent everybody. And so they're either really a lot smarter than every other team in baseball over the period of 15 different general managers or whatever, or they just, or spending does count. And I don't think that the Yankees are geniuses or anything like that. It's just that if you have a lot more money, you can, over the long run, you're going to be able to buy off a lot of your mistakes and buy up a lot of good talent.
Well, since you mentioned that, with the Yankees, the Red Sox, even the Cubs now, because they're spending more money and the expectations that are there, what do you think are the differences between having a payroll and a history of winning, like the Yankees, let's say, and the expectations, and the Giants, where the expectation is there because they've won the three World Series the last 5 years, versus the Dodgers and the Angels, really, they're spending so much every year, there's an expectation, you're supposed to win. How do you compare that?
Well, yeah, there's and when their failures are bigger flops, when the A's don't win everything, it's like, well, of course they didn't win. They're a scrappy team. They did the best they could.
Mm-hmm.
So, with big spending comes big expectations. But, if you're a rich guy, you don't care about that.
What about the fan bases in general? I mean, in the Bay Area, and you've been a part of both. You've been down in L.A., and now you're up here. And has that changed a lot because of the fact that the Giants are winning? I mean, I know just going to Candlestick growing up, there wasn't always that big expectation, but it's different in this ballpark now. And L.A., I mean, has it always been just kind of expected that they're supposed to win?
Yeah, in L.A., and it's funny because I grew up in L.A., and I was – people up in San Francisco hate everybody in L.A., and they hate the Dodgers, of course, but they hate people in L.A. When I grew up in L.A., we hated the Giants because I grew up a Dodger fan. But we did not hate San Francisco or the people in San Francisco. We didn't say, San Francisco to us was a great place. It was a wonderful place to visit. And we hated Giants, but we kind of compartmentalized, I guess. And it still strikes me as funny that people up here not that they hate the Dodgers, but that they hate Los Angeles and everything about it. But the Dodger fans are really good fans, going way, way back. They always outdrew every other fan base. People made jokes about them because they would come late and leave early to meet the traffic and everything, which they did. But, man, they showed up. I used to go to Dodger games all the time when I was a kid. And every night it was, 30,000, 35,000 people. And when I came up to Candlestick, it would be 5,000, 6,000 people. And then people were making fun of the people in L.A., and they didn't understand that. But obviously the ballpark is a huge deal. L.A., they've always had a great ballpark. And up here, not until until Pac Bell time.
Yeah, and now they're selling out every game. The Angels, you know, they've been able to draw pretty well. And maybe there's some hatred there for Giants fans because of 2002. That certainly has simmered, I would think. But that memory still sticks about the Giants blowing that World Series. You know, they were up 3-2 in Game 6. So now with this series coming up this weekend, I don't know, maybe does that bring it up? More hatred for L.A., I guess?
Yeah, it's always going to be strong. And that's kind of cool. I don't think the players feel a huge, strong rivalry. Although maybe they do. I think maybe there's that's starting to creep back in, the dislike for the Dodgers, just because of different styles and the payroll and all that stuff. So, yeah, I think it's strong. I think it's going to be huge. I think that it's always going to be a great rivalry.
More with Scott Osler after this.
Hi, I'm Mark McElhone at Kane's Tire in Santa Fe. If you want the lowest prices in Marin and the best service, call us at 453-2942. Kane's Tire, 1531 4th Street, where our prices beat Costco's prices every time.
What's your take on the Josh Hamilton situation? Because the Angels, of course, owe him a lot of money. He ends up getting traded over to the Texas Rangers. He doesn't seem, I don't know if you listened to his comments, but he doesn't seem like he is really putting a lot of blame on himself. And I know that he has an addiction that's difficult to deal with, but it's almost like he wasn't saying, hey, sorry, Angels, that I didn't come through when I was there. It's more, oh yeah, I'm glad to be back where, you know, I did so well. What's your take on the whole thing with Hamilton?
Well, Joe, I read Mike Socha's comments, and he said, where was Josh Hamilton's accountability to his teammates?
Right.
He's basically saying, hey, Angels screwed up, man. They knew they were getting a troubled guy. That's their lookout, sort of let the buyer beware kind of thing. But I agree 100% with Socius when he said that, where's Hamilton's feeling bad and his apology to the teammates he let down and also to the money he took and all that stuff. It's just, you know, I'm not a recovering guy, so I've never had to go through all that stuff, but I've been with family members that did, so I know a little bit about recovery and 12-step programs and all that stuff. And I know that if a person is truly in recovery, they have remorse, and one of the steps in the program typically is to reach out to people who you have hurt or situations where you have done things you shouldn't have, and basically apologize and make amends. And Hamilton seems like it's like, hey, that's their tough break, man. You know, it's like he sprained an ankle.
Right.
So he didn't get into the season. It's I would worry about him if I was his family or something like that. It would seem to me that he's just not fully grasping the situation or not taking full responsibility.
What about the way it's handled by Major League Baseball? And I know that their hands are tied because you have contract with the union, the CBA, and all that. So it's kind of difficult if it's not going to allow you to do much with a recovering addict here. But there's so much money at stake, Scott. It's just crazy that he could just do this, jump over to another team, and then the Angels have to pay that. I'm not feeling sorry so much for them, but it does affect everybody in their payroll and who they can pay in the future.
You know, I haven't studied enough about it, but here's one thing I don't understand. Maybe you can tell me. Is I thought the Angels had some kind of insurance or some kind of clause in contract that if he relapsed, they wouldn't have to pay him. So, and if they didn't, I wonder why they didn't. I wonder why they didn't have it in the contract.
Yeah, I'm not sure that if they have that or not. I mean, you got this Yankee situation with A-Rod where they don't want to pay for these milestone home runs, and he's, you know, closing in on Willie Mays. They don't want to pay money to celebrate that after everything they've been through. So, you know, there's another situation that's difficult to try to figure out.
Yeah, that was a little bit different in that I really think kind of the Yankees did know what they were getting into. Maybe they didn't know all the details and stuff, but they knew they were, you know, playing with dynamite when they signed him. And, you know, they basically built in those bonus clauses, and I can't see any way they're going to get out of them. But that's kind of a different thing. But when it comes down to a person like Josh Hamilton with the drug thing, it seems to me that there should be a team should be able to protect itself against a relapse.
Let's finish up talking about Barry Bonds. He had the conviction reversal, and I wonder how that affects everything as far as his future role with the Giants. You know, he's going to do something with the San Francisco Giants. And what about his Hall of Fame chances? Does it change anything in your mind or your colleagues as far as the way they'll look at Bonds when they're voting for the Hall of Fame?
Not really in my mind, and I don't think it will too much in the minds of my colleagues, because I think the people who voted, who basically did not vote for Barry Bonds for the Hall of Fame, did so on the grounds that he enhanced his performance and that he cheated baseball.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think this court ruling has anything to do with that. To me, that whole charge that he was found guilty and then reversed was bogus anyway. You know, he was convicted giving a weird rambling statement before a grand jury.
Right.
And as you and I know Barry, he doesn't give any other kind of statement in life other than a rambling kind of incoherent response to anything, including how are you today, how's the weather. So to me, that was, I don't think people are going to say, oh my God, now we see him in a different light. Now he's really an innocent man. He's not. He's innocent of that one charge, obviously. And that's cool, but in the minds of voters, I don't think it's changed at all. He's still a guy who cheated the game and took a lot of steroids.
Yeah, I guess there's that feeling that if Greg Anderson came forward, then, you know, for sure he would have been convicted, but Greg Anderson never did.
Right. Yeah, that's going to be a tough one because it's that voting block of people who are not going to vote for him, unless 50 old guys die at once, which I don't think is going to happen, and a bunch of young guys come in. And I'm not even sure it's an age thing either, like we portrayed it. It's just some people believe he cheated the game and therefore he shouldn't be in the hall, and other people say everybody was doing it and let's not police everybody. So it's a philosophical debate, but I don't think it changed at all because of that recent Barry's win in court.
What about his role with the Giants? Because, I mean, I'm a little torn. I think he could really help out hitters. You hear about, you know, how he said something to Michael Morse during the postseason
right.
last year. That helped him, or even during the year. So you know that he could be a help, but what kind of a message does it send to everybody that, you know, you've got some guy here who did violate, you know, basically being a clean player, and he's working with your players now? I don't know how much time has to pass before that becomes acceptable.
Yeah, well, Mark McGwire kind of overcame that, I think, and I think he's gotten past that, even though he never really confessed or anything. I think with Barry, in terms of his relationship with the Giants, I think this recent court reversal helped him because the Giants had some reluctance to be around him anyway. You know, there's always that thing, he brought our reputation down and all that stuff. But I think the fact he was a convicted felon until the ruling was reversed, I think that kind of weighed on the team. They still were keeping a little bit of a distance. But I think the fact that he's now got a clean record in terms of that thing, I think that'll make a difference with the team and maybe make them more receptive to giving him an expanded role, which I'm all for, you know. He's a weird dude, and he was terrible to deal with, and he was just a strange anti-social guy and everything, but I really think for whatever reason he is changing, you know.
Yeah, I don't think he needs a lounger there if he's going to be a hitting coach, let's say.
Yeah, and the cynic would say he's changing. Yeah, sure, he's changing because he wants his job now, or he wants to get back in baseball, or he misses the limelight, and maybe so. But if he's a better person or a nicer guy, and more pleasant to be around, then yeah, I'd forget about why. He just let's just say he is.
Well, Scott, hey, thanks a lot for the time today. Always enjoy reading your column, and good luck with the NBA playoffs, but look forward to seeing you at the ballpark soon.
All right, Joe, thanks a lot, man.
That's Scott Ostler from the San Francisco Chronicle. Coming up on Friday, we'll be at AT&T Park as the San Francisco Giants take on the Los Angeles Angels. For now, I'm Joe Castellano. Thanks for listening to Inside China Basin.